Our first guest can probably relate to the current weather conditions. He and co-workers brave some pretty tough conditions in search of salmon. That's because some species require a bit more monitoring, like coho salmon on the Oregon coast. The OASIS program, Oregon Adult Salmonid Inventory and Sampling, is out there counting fish in a lot of conditions. Mark Lewis is the OASIS program manager and our guest on The Exchange. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I'm very glad to be here.
Tell us a bit, if you would, about how the OASIS program got started.
It started really back in the 1990. The state of Oregon's been monitoring coho salmon since the late 40s, early 50s, at some kind of hand-selected sites up and down the Oregon coast. Basically going out and getting a count of how many fish and looking at the maximum number of fish you see in any one day in these sites. In the early 90s, coho salmon really were not doing very well. The populations were declining. We had pretty high harvest rates. And we decided we needed better information on where they are rather than just these 50 sites. We need a lot more information on what's going on in all the various basins. And so we started a program of randomly selected sites, and that was really where we got going.
So instead of 50 sites, how many are you talking about now?
We peaked at about 600. Scattered up and down the Oregon coast, and we actually do similar work in the lower Columbia as well. We're right now, this year, we've got 320 randomly selected sites, as well as still continuing some of the old standard sites, some of those old 50.
All right, so it's a 50 plus the 320, or
yeah.
Some of those anyway, some of the 50. That's a lot of places to go count fish.
It is a lot of places to go count fish. We go through lots of boots and waders.
And so how many people are doing the work, how big a geographic area is this if you're talking about close to 400 sites?
Oh, it is. It is a huge area. We have crews really working from the Hood River in the Columbia down to Astoria and then all the way down the Oregon coast, including up into like the South Umpqua, North Umpqua. So really broad geographic area. This year we've got about 45 people out doing surveys. We've been as high as about 70.
And officially, given the listing for coho salmon, what is the status of coho salmon as it stands officially, and what are you seeing in your surveys?
Yeah, they are listed as a threatened species under the Federal Endangered Species Act and a species of concern under Oregon's Sensitive and Endangered Species Act. So both the state and the federal government are very interested in the status of coho. Like I said, we've been doing these surveys since 1990 and actually coming up with abundance estimates of coho along the Oregon coast. I'll talk about the Oregon Coast ESU, which is one of the listing units for coho salmon and runs from the Mechanicum down to Sixes River. So the majority of the Oregon coast. We were as low as maybe 20,000 wild salmon in the early 90s. We peaked just recently in 2011 was about the biggest we've seen recently, and that was over 350,000 wild coho salmon.
That's a big difference.
It's a big jump, yeah. And you definitely see the impacts of varying ocean conditions over time as these populations tend to cycle up and down. But we're definitely seeing a building trend of more and more fish.
Help us understand the coho a little more intimately. Is it very different from Chinook salmon in the ways it responds? I mean, is it more environmentally sensitive, for example?
There are some differences. They have similar life histories. They both spawn in fresh water and then go out into the ocean to rear to adulthood and come back. Coho have a shorter, more simpler life history. They pretty much all return at 3 years old, except for a small component, maybe 5% of the fish that return as two-year-old males. So you tend to see they can jump up and down much more rapidly because it's essentially just one group of fish you're looking at with coho. Chinook have a much broader age structure. They can be anywhere from 2 to 6 years old. So even if one of the groups of fish that goes out into the ocean in a particular year runs into bad ocean conditions, you have different groups coming back at different from different age classes. So you have a little more buffering with Chinook.
So while you're busy counting the coho, what are the restrictions that are going on that help bring their numbers back? What activities are not taking place?
Yeah, we've changed Basically, we think about it in the four H's, as they refer to it in the Columbia River. The first one, harvest, we've cut back substantially in harvest in the 1990s. This essentially closed the taking of wild coho in 94, I believe it was. Since then, we've relaxed a little bit. You still have impacts with other fisheries, but really restricted harvest to allow more of those fish to come back. We've changed hatchery operations. We have far fewer hatchery programs on the Oregon coast for coho salmon, and so we have less of an interbreeding with hatchery fish and wild fish, and that's helped the wild fish to recover. We've also been doing a lot with habitat restorations, working with local watershed councils, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, ODFW, and various interested groups to open up habitat that was blocked and improve the quality of habitat by putting in structure and improving riparian trees and plantings. And then the final one is hydro, which is, there's not too big of an issue on the coast, more of a Columbia River issue.
All right. So, two distinct populations, the Columbia River coho and the Oregon coast coho?
Yeah, actually, the National Marine Fisheries Service determines when they look at a species to decide if it's in danger or threatened, they kind of establish what is the population. And so in Oregon, we have essentially three ESUs of coho, the Lower Columbia ESU, which, as I said, is kind of from Hood River down to Astoria. Then on the coast, we have the Oregon Coast ESU, which is the Nacanicum, kind of the sixes, and then the Southern Oregon, Northern California coast, which is pretty much all the coho from there down.
All right, so that explains why the Rogue River, for example, doesn't show up in the stuff you've been talking about with the other two zones.
Yeah, exactly. That's a different ESU. We do monitoring there. The district out of Gold Beach goes out and does some seining at Huntley Park and makes some estimates based on mark recapture of fish there. But that's a different program than what we're doing.
Is the protection of the coho different from about that point south?
They are actually also listed as a threatened species, so their status is the same in that sense as far as the protective statuses.
Mark Lewis is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the program manager for OASIS, the Oregon Adult Salmonid Inventory and Sampling Program out there counting coho to make sure that coho populations are recovering. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760, email address jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Steve in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Mark Lewis.
Howdy. A couple questions. I assume that you're counting these cohos as they're going back upstream to spawn. What are your hot dates in terms of when you begin and when you finish the process? And how do you differentiate the number of cohos coming up as opposed to the number of steelheads or whatever, do you have special equipment that can do a fish finder that'll differentiate, or is it guesswork, or?
All right, so the very procedures.
Where do figures come from?
All right, thanks for that, Steve. So a lot of questions about procedure there, Mark.
Yeah, well, thanks. Those are good questions, Steve. And as far as when we start, we actually start in October, and crews head out there, and we will work what we refer to as the salmon season, October through end of January. And we actually do then have a smaller group, but people continue on from February through May, specifically looking for steelhead. We're actually counting fish, not so much in transition, so they're heading up the rivers, but we're actually out on the spawning grounds. So a lot of these are relatively small creeks. Things you can pretty easily walk up, literally as small as ones where you can almost stand straddle of a creek, I mean, with 1 foot on each bank. They can get to be that small. So we don't really have any particular high-tech equipment. It's just people in boots and waders with polarized glasses like you would use for fishing and a walking stick, and you're walking up and looking in the pools mostly is where you see them a lot, up under root wads and undercut banks. Look in there and count what you see. We do also recover carcasses, and so we're trying to, for both live and dead fish, we identified a species, and there are traits in the coloration and size and area that you're in that can help you figure it out, whether you're looking at a coho or you're looking at a Chinook or a chum or a steelhead. Like I said, timing of the size of the creek, the behavior of the fish. Honestly, steelhead are really hard to see in these small creeks. You'll just kind of see an image like, I think I saw something, and then they disappear. Chinook tend to be big fish. When you spook them, they just pretty much head straight upstream, straight downstream, water, rocks splashing at you as they go by. So it, kind of a variety of things. We spend about a week training our staff each year, what keys to look for, how do you identify them, and then how do you sample the carcasses, because the salmon all die after spawning, so we can get our hands on the carcasses then and get a very definite whether it's a coho or a Chinook or a chum.
I guess the question about the hatchery fish is answered by the fact that if you're talking about creeks this small, this is not a place where hatchery fish would normally go, right?
No, and we don't really want them to go there. You do still see an occasional fish out in those areas. But we definitely, the intent is for them to either be caught or return to the hatchery. But we're looking for, and you can tell them by the adipose fin clip. So pretty much all the coho now are adipose fin clips. We can tell them that way.
So that one little fin is missing, and you can pretty much tell quickly.
Yeah.
That they were born in a hatchery. And, of course, it's not the hatchery fish you're trying to protect. It's the wild fish you're trying to protect. So this must take some intricate timing. I mean, how do you try to figure out which creeks to hit on which days, that sort of thing?
Yeah, the current weather has been challenging, to say the least. It is, because you need to get out there, because we're trying to see these fish in the creek, and they're trying to not be seen for the most part. You kind of have to time it around storms to where the creeks are low enough and clear enough that you can really see into them well. And we're trying to also get in, like I said, we go from October through January, but we're really trying to get in weekly or at least once every 10 days. And there's a lot of looking at weather sites, listening to weather reports, kind of figuring out when can we get out there, how do I get around this storm, planning your schedule of, and a lot of it is just you become familiar with creeks of these certain ones, they'll do well at the beginning of the storm, but they're going to blow out after that, or these other ones, they'll clear up really quickly after the rain stop, and you kind of do a lot of logistics and planning.
Blowout meaning they're too high and too turbid to go get a decent
county. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mark Lewis is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Program Manager for OASIS, Oregon Adult Salmonid Inventory and Sampling. So given the number of places you have to hit over the course of the season, how many times over the course of the season will you hit them, or is it pretty much just once each?
No, actually, we try to go back weekly if we can do it. But overall, you're probably into each one of these creeks, and the surveys we do are roughly a mile in length. You're probably in there 12 to 14 times over the course of a season.
Wow. And how many people are doing this work altogether? Did I ask that already?
We have about 45 this year out doing this work.
Mm-hmm. All paid staff, some volunteers?
Our staff are all paid, but we do work with watershed councils and do actually take out volunteers. People sometimes just like to go out. It's pretty fun to do, honestly.
And where do the numbers go from here? I mean, what does the OASIS program do in packaging up what it does? Who does this go off to, and how is it used to determine what might be done in terms of coho management?
Yeah, we actually, at the end of the season, will go through and make sure all the data is into our databases and all QAQC checked. Then we will actually produce abundance estimates. Those we post on the webpage, but we also take them to this meeting, the Oregon Production Index Technical Team meeting, in early February. And at that point, what these various groups, this Oregon, Washington, the federal agencies, the Columbia River tribes, you try and essentially reconstruct what happened with this year's coho. How many were caught? How many returned to hatcheries? How many returned to spawn naturally? And sort of do an accounting. How many went where? Then we also make projections about what's likely to come back next year, mostly based on those jack recoveries as well as some indicators of ocean conditions. And so you can then forecast what we think is going to come back next year, and then that goes into the whole regulation and season setting procedures. They also get used to monitor just trends in abundance over time for both state and federal reviews of how are the fish doing and are they recovering. So they go into that sort of a venue as well. And then finally, they get used a lot by local groups looking at we want to do something to help salmon. And so there we will often get requests of, have you ever looked for fish in this creek? Because we're thinking about maybe trying to do some habitat restoration. And so they will come to us and get, oh, yes, we've seen fish there, or no, we've never done that creek, or we've done it and we haven't seen fish there, and maybe that would be a good candidate for restoration.
You mentioned a web page. It got a little tricky for us yesterday looking through both Oregon Fish and Wildlife and Oregon State University. Which is the primary OASIS page?
Ours is actually, we're here in Corvallis, and so our web page is actually hosted by Oregon State University.
All right.
And people are linked to the agency page as well.
All right. And people can find the counts, the abundance estimates at that site?
Yeah. We actually have, if you get to the OASIS webpage, we have under a data button, there's both kind of what we're seeing so far this year, including essentially a one-page per survey of every day we've gone to that survey and what we've seen, up to actual abundance estimates for various years, for all the past years.
You mentioned going through a lot of boots and waders. Do you go through a lot of cold medicine as well?
Yes. There are days like today where I'm glad that I'm sitting in the office and not out there.
But somebody is out there today working?
Probably not too much today. The streams are all kind of peaking right now.
All right. Rapid and turbid, so the blowout conditions we're talking about.
Exactly.
Mark Lewis is the program manager for OASIS, the Oregon Adult Salmonid Inventory and Sampling Program, trying to make sure that coho salmon populations are recovering as they are meant to do. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It was really a pleasure.